This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Love Sport Review. 7 until 8pm this evening, where we discuss all the big things that have been happening over the course of the weekend, or in this case, let's say last 24 hours. I mean, what a weekend it was. We all knew, didn't we, this date was coming the 1st of June, where we were going to have finally that Champions League final. It means, like, well, it's just felt like we've waited absolute weeks for it. It has. It's been 3 weeks, people, since the last Premier League game of the season. That's how long we've been waiting for the Champions League final between Spurs and Liverpool. Did it live up to the hype? Do you know what? No, it didn't, did it? It absolutely did not. But so much to talk about from that game. We can talk about Liverpool finally winning a trophy. Jurgen Klopp, more importantly, finally winning a trophy. Spurs, so close yet so far. And let's talk about the handball. Let's talk about Harry Kane. So much to discuss about that game from last night. And I really want your company and your views this evening. So do get in touch if there's something you want to get off your chest. Handball, yes or no? For me, it was a handball. I'm gutted. I'm gutted for Spurs and I'm gutted for Moussa Sissoko. But it is a handball and I'm happy to share why I think that was. I was there yesterday at the new White Hart Lane Stadium with all Spurs fans. And it was the most strangest, most surreal feeling. Because look, I had the most incredible day yesterday. I headed up to North London, went up to Seven Sisters, met some mates, all big Spurs fans, went down the road, went to the Beehive Pub and various others, just drinking, enjoying the atmosphere and the day. And it was honestly one of the best atmospheres in terms of a day that I've ever experienced as a football fan. Just everyone out on the streets, everyone in the pubs, everyone wearing Spurs shirt, or frankly no shirt at all because the weather was that incredible. It was absolutely amazing. It really, really was. And in the concourse, in the stadium, again, I've never experienced anything like it. Now, I like to go to a lot of music gigs in my spare time. And to kind of maybe explain what it was like with the chants and the fans really going for it before the game, during the game and after the game was like, you know, your favourite rock band when they play their best song. You know, the one that everyone knows and everyone goes nuts for it and they're all dancing around and pushing in the middle, doing a bit of a death circle, a bit of a mosh. But it was like that constantly for an entire day yesterday all around Spurs. And then that happened 20 seconds in. Handball. On Moussa Sissoko. I'm gutted for him. I am. I feel it's harsh. But I feel like it's only really harsh because of how it happened and when it happened, as opposed to the nature of the actual incident. I mean, Moussa Sissoko, it hits his arm, doesn't it? It hits his chest first, but it hits his arm. And his arm is out wide. And it shouldn't be there. And you can't really criticise Moussa Sissoko for it because ultimately, all he's doing is he's pointing to his teammates behind him, you know, handing out some instructions, doing some organising, which you want your players to be doing. And it's just so incredibly, incredibly unfortunate. But the referee had no option but to give that for a handball. Now, I feel that if his arm was by his side, right, and the cross had come in and hit him on his chest first and then hit his arm, then it wouldn't be a penalty. But it's just because of that incredibly unnatural position that his arm finds itself in when it's hit, means that it has to be, you know, a penalty decision. And at that early on in the game, it just completely killed it, didn't it? As I said, I was in the stadium and the atmosphere and the moment and the feeling around it was just a complete numbness. Everyone just looking at each other thinking, really? Wow? And it's just felt like the weeks, the months of everything of getting build up, it almost just kind of completely disappeared all in that split moment when Mo Salah then scored that penalty. We'll be hearing from various people throughout the show this evening, but let's turn our attention, shall we, to the guys that actually did win the game. Liverpool won it, and we can hear from the manager, Jurgen Klopp, maybe at some point throughout the rest of the show. I mean, Jurgen Klopp, what was it? 6 defeats in finals in a row. I mean, for a club of that size and of that big, that's incredible, isn't it, for a team to lose that many. He lost 3 Champions League finals in a row with Borussia Dortmund and both Liverpool, but finally winning one yesterday. It was somewhat of an underwhelming game, wasn't it? Why do you think that was? Was it two sides cancelling each other out? Was it the fact that they hadn't played for a few weeks? Or was it that these two sides, I'm not going to start calling them bottlers, but you've got a situation here where Spurs had never been in this position before, right? Their best player, Harry Kane, was clearly not fit. And then the pressure on Liverpool was absolutely huge. Just imagine if Liverpool did not win that game yesterday. If they got to the Champions League final to face a side like Spurs, with all due respect, Liverpool were favourites. And then to lose the Premier League after getting 97 points, just imagine if Liverpool had walked away from that season empty-handed. So, you know, it's so heartbreaking for me, because I did really want Spurs to win that. But let's hear from Mauricio Pochettino, of course, the Spurs manager, and just get his views on what was a big night for the football club last night.
To concede after 22nd or 32nd a penalty, that changed completely the plans. It's a massive impact. But the team was great. Overall, I think we dominate the game. We could have three chances, but they were more aggressive, clinical in front of the goal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd quite go as far as in saying that Spurs dominated the game. By the way, if you are a stats person, I think Liverpool the first side to win a Champions League final with less than 50% possession since Inter Milan. I think it was when they beat Barcelona. It was a Diego Milito brace when Jose Mourinho was the boss all those years ago. So, I mean, in that sense, you can say that Spurs were the better side, but I think it was 75 minutes until they tested Alisson. There certainly wasn't a shot on target in the first half. I seem to remember Christian Eriksen right just towards the break having a shot which went miles over the closest that Spurs came. But look, Spurs fans, I do want to hear from you this evening. 0208 70 2558. How are you feeling? Was the penalty decision the right one? Harry Kane, should he even have been on the football pitch? It's hard, isn't it? Undoubtedly your best player, such a leader, but he's not fit. How can you drop Lucas Moura, the guy who scored a hat-trick against Ajax in the semi-final for that game? It's tough, isn't it? Look, Spurs fans, let me know. Now you've had almost, 24 hours to think about this. 0208 70 2558. Now, the other huge story from the weekend just gone. Anthony Joshua. Oh my word. Who saw that coming? The guy, right, who for me has changed the face not only of British boxing, but world boxing. This guy sells out Wembley, sells out Cardiff, sells out every single stadium he goes to. He is the face of boxing. He has transformed this thing. AJ, Anthony Joshua, the biggest star in heavyweight boxing. He looks incredible, doesn't he? We all know this. And we know it's not all about muscles. But who on earth thought that he would lose to Andy Ruiz Jr.? We're all talking, weren't we, about what's next for Anthony Joshua. What happens when he beats Andy Ruiz? Is he going to fight Tyson Fury? Is he going to fight Deontay Wilder? Well, I'll tell you what, he ain't got that option anymore. He's got to do a rematch, hopefully, if he'll fight him, against Andy Ruiz Jr. It was one of the biggest upsets, I don't think, in boxing, perhaps in sporting history. This guy, I mean, everyone was underestimating because of the way that he looked. But as I was just saying to the guys before I came onto this show, this was a guy who fought Joseph Parker, who at the time was a world champion, an unbeaten heavyweight boxer. He went and fought him in his own backyard in New Zealand. And if you watch that fight, and it's freely available for you to watch on the internet, Andrew Ruiz Jr. should have beat Joseph Parker. And we always know, don't we? We always complain about the way that boxing goes with regards to the judges and the scorecards when it goes to points. I can absolutely guarantee you, if that fight had happened in Mexico, or if that fight had happened in America, Andy Ruiz Jr. would have got that decision. And when Joseph Parker fought Anthony Joshua, there would have been a defeat on his record, and that would have been against Andy Ruiz Jr. So the fact that everyone completely underestimated him, the fact that nobody gave him a chance in that fight, in hindsight, and we can all do that, can't we? We can all be incredibly wise after the event. It was disrespectful to Andy Ruiz Jr. I mean, his last fight, by the way, he fought Kevin Johnson. Again, a guy who has fought Anthony Joshua, and Anthony Joshua made very light work of him. They fought recently, yeah? Do you know how much Andy Ruiz Jr. got paid for that fight against Kevin Johnson? He got paid £30,000. Do you know how much he got paid to be a late replacement with a month's notice to fight Anthony Joshua? £3 million. Well, guess what? When that rematch happens, if it is to happen, he will earn approximately quadruple that money. That fight, that hit, that third round when he knocked down Anthony Joshua, eventually finishing him off in the seventh round, will absolutely change Andy Ruiz Jr.'s world. I mean, the question is, was it luck? Can he push on from here? Could we see, I mean, I'm deadly serious right now. We talk about Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, and Anthony Joshua, and you can throw Dillian White in there as well. Can we throw Andy Ruiz Jr. in the same mix, the same breath as these names in heavyweight boxing? It's absolutely incredible, isn't it? And we can speak now, as we can hear from the former British and Commonwealth featherweight boxing champion, Kevin Mitchell. He told the Love Sport Weekend Breakfast this morning that the way Anthony Joshua responds to this upset is absolutely vital.
He went in there with the wrong tactics. I think he thought he was going to blow him out. I think we all did, to be fair, but that's what happens. You get hiccups. And I think what will prove now is Harry's going to come back and Harry's return to the fighters now. And that's when you see a good heavyweight. That's when you see a great heavyweight. Whether he can come back now and pull this fight around, win the fight, win the belts back, and then retain it, and then go on the fight Tyson Fury's, the Wilders.
Yeah, I really fear, actually, for Joshua, I have to say. Such a psychological thing, isn't it, boxing? There's very few sports like it. It's just you, one-on-one. You need that ability to be able to take a punch, but also need that killer instinct to knock someone out, and that skill and determination and the heart and the energy to just keep on going. And when you lose like that, so unexpectedly, how do you pick yourself up from it? You know, how will that affect you the next time you head into a boxing ring? It's going to be so, so interesting to see. I mean, for instance, if Anthony Joshua, yeah, fights at the Millennium Stadium or at Wembley, what's the attendance going to be like? Is it going to be 80-plus thousand? Are all these fair-weather Anthony Joshua boxing fans still going to turn up now he's lost to him? I don't think so. But look, we're going to talk about this until 8 p.m. this evening. I've got a really, really interesting guest for you. The name Fres Oquendo is perhaps not one that you know. It might be if you're a real kind of diehard boxing fan. But Fres Oquendo, well, look, he's a proper heavyweight boxer, still ranked in one of the WBA and IBF heavyweight boxing divisions. He's fought the likes of Evander Holyfield, Brian Ruiz, and various other very well-known heavyweight boxers. Well, he hasn't actually fought professionally for around 4 years' time, a long-running dispute with the WBA. He was actually supposed to fight the German Manuel Char for a belt very recently, but again, this dispute is ongoing. Well, the situation is with Fres. He believes, because of the way that the ranking works, that he should be the next man to fight Andy Ruiz Jr., and not Anthony Joshua. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because boxing is not a straightforward. There's lots of money, lots of businesses, lots of TV talks. Well, Fres Oquendo is going to join us in around half an hour's time on the phone, and we can talk about that situation. Also, Chris Williamson, the boxing journalist, is a great guy, Chris. We'll have a chat about him, his views on last night. And again, Spurs fans, Liverpool fans, want your views on that game last night. Guy Watts, our man in Madrid, he's still out there. Well, he's going to finish in around an hour's time. So, do you know what we'll do? We'll keep him waiting no longer. We'll speak to him after this break here on Love Sport.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
So let's talk a little bit more about Spurs. We're going to hear from some various people who are at the game, or some ex-Spurs players as well, who've given their views on what was frankly, one of the biggest nights in your football club's history last night. Now, it didn't quite go to plan, but there's still lots to be proud of, without a shadow of a doubt. Now, look, it was my first trip to the new White Hart Lane yesterday. It's something I've been really desperate to do since it opened, and I've heard so many wonderful things about it. I mean, my word, there was plenty of build-up for it, wasn't it? Just imagine if it hadn't been as good as it was. It would have been somewhat underwhelming. But look, I can tell you, if there's any doubt whatsoever, for a neutral here, that stadium is, do you know what? No bones about it. It's the best stadium I've ever been to. I mean, we can talk about maybe the size of others, say, for instance, like Wembley, but this does not even compare. Now, again, it may sound somewhat trivial to be saying this, but the food and drink and everything else within the concourse and built within the stadium is absolutely world class. Now, there's nothing worse, is it, when you go to a football ground and you queue for however long to get yourself a burger or a pint, and your pint's in a plastic cup and it's, what, there's no fizz to it and it's rubbish, or you get a burger and it's dry. Well, here, I've never seen in my life at a football stadium as many options for food as there is at that stadium. There is queues, obviously, but you get seen to so quickly because there's so, so many options. And the beer, again, so much variety on the beer. It's not just lager or ale. So, so many options. And the pricing of it, again, absolutely brilliant. I'm sure people won't mind me saying this. £4 for a pint of Amstel. Now, if you live in London, which obviously I do and various others of you supporting Spurs do, You know, you go to an average pub these days and you're lucky if you're paying under £6. To go within a stadium, usually you'd expect that to be even more than that. But various options and £4 for a pint of Amstel, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. And the atmosphere within the stadium, as I said earlier, was absolutely superb. And you know what? I just want to mention this as well. Within the stadium, there was something that really kind of hairs on the back of the neck situation. Now, unfortunately, there was some horrible, horrible news yesterday of Jose Antonio Reyes, the former Arsenal winger striker who tragically passed away in a car crash in Spain, aged just 35. Naturally, a former Atletico Madrid player, that final, of course, being played in Madrid, there was a minute's silence or applause. I'm not entirely sure, actually, what they did at the stadium. But when that kind of became apparent to what was happening within the new White Hart Lane stadium, there was this moment where people almost just looked at each other thinking, this is a former Arsenal player. And people started to stand up and applaud to the point that every single person in that stadium stood up and applauded a former Arsenal player. And it's just, well, you know what? It's exactly what should happen, but quite often doesn't. And I just thought it was an absolutely incredible moment. I thought the Spurs fans in general were an absolute credit to themselves and most importantly the football club. Let's hear from some disappointed Spurs fans though, who were watching at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium to see exactly what they thought of that last night's performance.
Spurs did what they could. Liverpool obviously with the early penalty could afford to sit back, just let us come at them. But so all in all, the occasion today was absolutely fantastic.
Gutted, absolutely gutted. Penalty, yes, it was a penalty, but we should have done them.
Well, do you know what? You're probably not going to have a better chance of beating Liverpool because they were below par, weren't they, yesterday? It wasn't vintage Liverpool, but unfortunately, it wasn't vintage Spurs. And for them to win that, well, do you know what? It feels like Liverpool were always capable of playing poorly and winning that game. But for Spurs to win that game yesterday, they had to be on it. And unfortunately, you know, Son, Kane, Dele Alli and various others just, I wouldn't say they were poor, but, you know, unfortunately, they just weren't quite at that level required to beat a team like Liverpool, marshalled by the likes of Virgil van Dijk and Alisson. It just proves, doesn't it, those kind of players and the money that they cost. And like, nobody really wants to talk about it. It's kind of a frustrating and easy stick to throw at people, isn't it? But the money that Virgil van Dijk and Alisson cost, it just goes to show that's the difference, right, between winning a Champions League. That's the difference between finishing third and, I mean, 97 points, between winning a Premier League title. And Liverpool, they just feel that, you know, that's where Spurs can be. And now they've got a real opportunity to push on, haven't they? They can use Liverpool as that model because not too long ago, Liverpool were in the same place as what Spurs are. So hopefully, Daniel Levy will look at that situation and the journey they've been on, the stadium, and what Pochettino has done and said, do you know what? If I give you £200 million, just imagine what would happen. Now, look, usually on a Sunday evening, Graham Butler would join me in the studio. We'll do some transfers, do some non-league, usually 9 until 10. Well, he's not here today. That is because he's in a banged up car, a little motorhome with his mates on the way back from Madrid. He is a huge Spurs fan. Look, I'm gutted for him. I'm absolutely gutted because, like many others, he made the most ridiculous trip out to Madrid. Not even to go to the game, but to be just there in Madrid to hopefully be part of history, seeing that football club win the Champions League. Now, he's on his way home. We're hoping, you know, if his signal's good enough, to have a little chat with him in around 20 minutes' time about just how he is feeling now. He's had a little bit of time, a little think about it, maybe sees things differently. But anyway, Spurs fans as well, you can also get involved. 0208 70 20 558 this evening. Just your thoughts, please. Willing to have them. Right, we're going to change tack somewhat after this quick break. We're going to turn our attentions to boxing. Joined on the phone with boxing journalist Chris Williamson.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to the Love Sport Review here on Love Sport Radio. I'm sat here in the studio right now. I'm on my own this evening, but I've got all my monitors, all my TV screens. I'm just looking to my left now, and once again, I'm seeing, I'm going to say highlights, but for me it's lowlights. I am still absolutely gutted of Anthony Joshua against Andy Ruiz Jr. last night. I've just seen the picture of the referee calling off here. I mean, jubilant scenes, as you'd imagine, from Andy Ruiz Jr. and just Anthony Joshua. I mean, I can't even quite get my head around or almost explain how he looked and how he came across. It was just so, so bemusing. Of course, never, ever have we seen him like that before. Look, Chris Williamson, boxing journalist on the phone now. Chris, a very good evening to you, mate. And just how are you feeling? How's your mood and reaction like? Still in complete and utter shock like me?
Hi, Jay. Yeah, I know you're a huge Joshua fan. I'm perhaps maybe a little bit more impartial, but yeah, it is that sort of feeling of shock when you've seen a big heavyweight upset like that. There's really nothing like it in sport, really, is there? It's people are talking about the parallels with Douglas's upset of Tyson. I don't think it's quite as much of an upset as that was back in 1990. It's probably more the equal of Lewis's upset to probably Adam McCall in 94 or Rahman in 2001. So it's probably along those. It's certainly one of the biggest upsets in the history of heavyweight boxing now,
yeah,
for sure. It's in the conversation, you know. But as you say, Joshua didn't really appear to be himself. But what I wouldn't want to do is take away any of the credit from Ruiz at all. I mean, I was on Love Sport. I'm not going to say I called the upset at all. I didn't. But what I did do was say that even Johnny Nelson, who has never knowingly undersold a Sky pay-per-view, wasn't giving Ruiz enough credit and wasn't giving the fight enough credit, because yeah, it was clear to those of us that had seen Ruiz, particularly in his match against Joe Parker, who's no mother at all, and he was, you know, Herner's sign this week just before the fight, and that looks like a great deal in light of the fact that he is, you know, the only man to have beaten Ruiz. But if you watch that fight, Ruiz, it was, you know, one of the judges gave it a draw. It was a very even fight, and Ruiz boxed brilliantly, but he boxed even better on his big night last night, where he was sensational. I mean, some of those body shots that he let off, he just looked. If Joshua takes this rematch, who do you fancy, Jay?
I'm more worried about Joshua now, because it's a psychological thing, isn't it, with boxing, and we can bring up so many examples of when a boxer has been perhaps so dominant, they've never lost before, and there's so much hype around them. And when you lose that one fight, there's quite no other sport like it, boxing, isn't it? And when to defeat and to be able to come back from it and to put yourself in that situation again and to not think about it, it's a huge, huge test now, isn't it, for Joshua to be kind of the global face of boxing, to being a guy who's just lost to Andy Ruiz Jr. I mean, do you, is there any doubt in your mind that he can pick himself up again? Because I'm not 100% sure. I'm really worried about him, Chris.
I right now it's difficult to call it the day after. It really is. But right now, I would probably favour Ruiz in a rematch. You'd have to look at where it is. I think they're talking about it being in the UK, and we'll also probably in the coming days we'll get to really understand what the detail of the rematch clause is. So, you know, it's likely that Matrim and Joshua still call the shots. You know, it was their choice to go out to New York as part of building the kind of Joshua brand over in the US, partly to give them more leverage for, you know, the potential Deontay Wilder fight, which is now gone up in smoke, as we see it might do, in the same way that Lewis and Bow kind of went up in smoke when McCall upset Lewis all those years ago in 94. So the parallels are there. But right now, I'd be afraid that Joshua won't get back to this status. As you say, a loss, especially a loss like this, can unravel someone's confidence, especially, you know, a very confident fighter. You know, I've kind of reminded myself that all the way back in 2001 as well, I think it was, when Nassim Hamed.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, the featherweight champion, long reigning featherweight champion.
So he was my favourite at the time as well, and he just never came back, did he?
He didn't. He was kind of beaten clearly by Mexican, actually, Marco Antonio Barrera, as you'll know.
Yeah.
He had a rematch clause as well, interestingly.
So he turned it down, didn't he?
He turned it down. He fought once more against Manuel Calvo in a very uninspiring performance in London, and then never fought again. So he never really fought again at the top level. And Hamed was a very young man. I think he was 27 or 28 at the time. So especially for confidence fighters like Hamed, I wouldn't say Joshua is quite like that. He doesn't really have the same personality as Nassim, where you can understand where once. Yeah, he wasn't what he kind of built himself up to be, and he kind of realised that. And you can see why Hamed lost that confidence and was never quite the same again. Joshua doesn't seem to have quite that mentality, but he seemed a little off even last night, didn't he? Sort of even before the fight, he didn't quite seem himself.
But I'm watching videos as well of him now, and he was laughing and smiling, hugging Ruiz in the ring, congratulating him, and it's just that kind of killer instinct and that winner's, you know, desire just felt a little bit like it wasn't there, and it's still not there.
Yeah, it is strange, isn't it? I mean, the first fight I ever attended, Jake, was that McCall rematch, and the McCall upset of Lewis back in 94. And one of the things I remember really, really clearly of that night as a kid, really, was waiting until after the fight and seeing Lewis go into his kind of limo, and he was absolutely devastated. Mm. As you point out, he didn't really get that impression from Joshua last night. He eventually turned up at the press conference and seemed fine about it. And you know, there's theories that the pressure coming off his shoulders, he's kind of almost happy about it. But it's not what you want to see from the heavyweight champion, is it? He's just being kind of reasonably okay with losing his titles like that. It's a bit strange.
So obviously we've been talking for absolute ages, it feels, about who's the number one. Fury, Wilder, Joshua, and I've kind of liked the fact that they've not been fighting, because it just means that people talk about it more. Because whether it happens in 6 months or in 3, 4, 5 years, it would happen at some point. And I've kind of liked the fact that we were waiting for it, because I didn't see anyone being able to beat them from outside of it. In a kind of strangely kind of parallel world, do you actually think this now may speed up, that Fury and Wilder be sat in there thinking, you know what, actually, sod it, we'll fight. I'll fight Joshua and I'll take it now?
Yeah, that is possible. So again, the parallels with Lewis and Bo. Lewis did get knocked off by McCall. They eventually signed to fight just before that. So they after that was after Bo had been beaten by Holyfield in the rematch. So sometimes a loss can mean that it does come to pass. But in this case. Trying to think of the permutations now. Because it was announced, wasn't it, just prior to this fight, that Fury and Wilder have apparently signed to fight a rematch. Now, I haven't really seen a great deal from the Fury side on that, but Wilder has announced it. They've confirmed it. Shelley Finkel, Wilder's promoter or manager, one of his managers, has also confirmed that. Shelley Finkel is not the type to just come out with something which isn't true. So I suspect that is on for the spring. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The chink in the armour is being revealed now for everybody to see. So it's very possible that one of those two now will fight Joshua. But, this is where I disagree with you, Jake. I like to see these fights when they're really hot.
And yeah, no, of course we want to, yeah.
Yeah, it's the heavyweight championship. So it's kind of absurd that we've got two or possibly three guys calling themselves the heavyweight champion, isn't it? You know, there's only one world and there will only to be one champion. So I like to see these fights happen when they're all at the top. And no one's really kind of asked too much or wondered too much if Ruiz might actually fight Wilder now,
That's what I've said, because potentially we've had these three that we're talking about, and you can probably just about put Dillian White in there as well. I mean, is it absurd to now throw in Andy Ruiz Jr. in there is some of, and if not one of the best in the world, or is this just nights?
He's proved he's the best in the world. That wasn't a fluke, was it? That wasn't just one shot out of nowhere that knocked out Joshua. He was, albeit it was really the fact that Joshua had knocked Ruiz down in that third round that you could say Joshua got careless, but it was by no means just a one punch kind of knockout, was it? It was a steady beating in lots of ways. So Ruiz has absolutely proved himself to be one of the best.
Who's number one then? For you? I know it's an impossible, almost question to ask, Chris. But for you, who is in your mind the best boxer and arguably number one?
For me, you've got to put Fury as number one, because most of us reckon he beat Wilder. Wilder's without doubt in the argument. Beat Dominic Brazil, his number one contender, in one round just a couple of weeks ago in Brooklyn. And now he's making another statement by fighting Ortiz again. and then Fury. So that's a heck of a run. So, you know, Wilder's taken some very, very dangerous matches. But really, I'd probably put Fury as number one on the basis that, to me and most people out there, he beat Wilder, probably Wilder two and Ruiz three. With probably Joshua moving down to four. That's probably how I'd see it.
Yeah, no, it's hard to disagree. Look, Chris, absolute pleasure speaking to you as always, mate. I love talking boxing with you.
Okay, Jay. Cheers.
There we have it. Chris Williamson there, a big boxing journalist, Boxing Monthly, giving us his views on there. What Tyson Fury number one? It's hard to disagree, isn't it? But Deontay Wilder certainly kind of making moves to try take that mantle. It's all up for grabs, is it now, that Anthony Joshua has lost against Andy Ruiz Jr. Right, we're going to take a break. And then a really interesting guest I've got for you on the phone. He's a Cuban heavyweight. Now, not quite active, but he's trying to be active. And he seems to believe... that Andy Ruiz Jr. will not be fighting Anthony Joshua in a rematch next. He thinks it should be him.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Yeah, really enjoyed talking to Chris there. Go follow him on Twitter. He's a brilliant boxing journalist. Really speaks like a proper boxing fan, doesn't he? In terms of, you know, maybe sometimes people can be a bit patronising, a bit kind of ignorant and not to talk down to you, but he's a proper boxing fan and he really, really does know his stuff. He's great, great value. So Fres Oquendo, hopefully going to be speaking to him in a few short moments. Now, if you're not aware of who he is, well, he is 46 years old, so certainly kind of in the twilight years, shall we say, of his boxing career. He's Puerto Rican, and in his career, he's fought the likes of David Tua, John Ruiz, Evander Holyfield, James Toney, Jean-Marc Mormec, Oliver McCall and Ruslan Chagyev, and was supposed to be fighting Manuel Char. But unfortunately, there's kind of a bit of a dispute going on at the moment with the WBA. But he seems to think that he's still on kind of one of their ranking lists. And you know that the way it works with kind of mandatories and the way that boxing people like to match up people, that he thinks that now Andy Ruiz Jr. has won that title, that it should be him in line to fight him next. And again, something quite interesting about Fres is recently the stories are to be believed, and I will ask him this, is that he was offered £1 million to fight Jarrell Miller, but he didn't take it. So this is a guy who is very, very well respected. And hopefully will be speaking to us very shortly on the phone. But again, Love Sport fans this evening, what are your views on that fight last night and where the heavyweight division goes from here? You can actually text in via WhatsApp now here on Love Sport Radio. It's the exact same number as before, so do it on 0208 70 20 558. Remember to include your name with your point of view so we can then read it out on air. Just add Love Sport as a contact and then drop us a message. And again, 0208 70 20 558 is the number that you need to ring. But as I said to Chris, I'm absolutely gutted for Anthony Joshua. I feel like he's completely transformed the face of boxing. 5-10 years ago, I mean, we probably had the George Groves Karl Froch fight, and I know Karl Froch loved to talk about it all the time, about how he fought in front of 80,000 people at Wembley. But other than that, in my lifetime, how many other fights has there been like that in this country? There has been so few. And Joshua completely changed the face of boxing. Everywhere you go, every billboard is his face. He's a poster boy that didn't need to talk trash. He did it was talking in the boxing ring. And he'd fought everybody he had to fight. You know, he did. And people say he fought kind of nobodies. He fought Klitschko. He fought Takam. He fought Povetkin. He fought everybody who was in his way. Dillian White, Dominic Brazil, who've just seen Deontay Wilder fight. He's beat him before. He's beat everyone he had to beat. And he was unbeaten number one. Only Joseph Parker had taken him the distance. He had the perfect record. And the way that boxing works, it's so hard to get back from a defeat when you've not lost before. I mean, David Price, we kind of almost, not joke about him, but it's also, we must feel sorry for David Price, don't we? We want David Price to do well, but ultimately we perhaps know that he's not. We know that he's done. We know that we just want him to carry on for as long as possible. We don't want David Price to get hurt. But there was a time, right, when David Price was not quite the Anthony Joshua, but he was the up-and-coming hope of British boxing. I interviewed David Price, I mean, over 10 years ago, and he was in training for his fight. And guess what? We all know he's best mates with Tony Bellew. Well, I was sent there for a TV company to interview David Price, and Tony Bellew was there. I didn't even know who Tony Bellew was. Nobody was talking about Tony Bellew. Everyone was talking about this great hope, David Price. Now, he lost to Tiny Thompson, which was a huge shock at the time. Nobody expected it. And you know what he did? He wanted an immediate rematch to kind of prove that that was a fluke, and it was him. He was number one. But he fought him again, and he lost again. He then went on a run of defeats. And unfortunately, David Price had to almost start again. And has never been able to kind of pick up that momentum. And it was such a psychological thing with David that you know when he's hurt, or you know there's always the ability to hurt him, that he's probably going to lose that fight. Now, I just hope and a pray that Anthony Joshua will recover from this. He fights Andy Ruiz Jr. again, and he beats him. And then he can go back to the drawing board and fight the likes of Wilder and Fury. I mean, it's not about being a Joshua fanboy. It's just to make that division as interesting as we possibly can, because it needs it. You know, for years and years and years, we had the Klitschkos, didn't we? We just absolutely dominated the division. And let's be frankly honest, it was boring. I mean, Vitaly and Vladimir at their prime, yeah, they were good boxers, but there was no one really, was there? After the likes of Lennox Lewis retired, those boys were not challenged by anyone. They had the likes of David Haye stepping up from cruiserweight because the division was so weak, and they were able to win titles because that heavyweight title, that heavyweight division was so, so weak. Well, it's not like that anymore, and I'm gutted for Anthony Joshua. I mean, congratulations, absolutely, it has to be said to Andrew Ruiz Jr. Completely written off, wasn't he? And a part of me thinks he's going to become a bit of a poster boy now, isn't he? This guy is going to be ranked number one in various of these lists as the biggest, best boxer in the world. And he looks like the average bloke down the pub. And that's not being disrespectful. It's not. It's true. You look at the condition that Anthony Joshua is in. It's incredible, isn't it? There is not a single bloke in the world who would not look at Anthony Joshua and think, my word, how on earth did you get like that? And you saw in the head-to-head when they faced off before the fight, Anthony Joshua towering over him at 6'6", and then Andy Ruiz Jr. at the measly 6'2". But he did, didn't he? And Ruiz looked like a fan. He just looked like he was happy to be there. But my word, put in the performance of his life. Absolutely incredible. Right, need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to try to speak to Guy Watts. He's been in Madrid for the last week or so, soaking up the atmosphere. He's about to head back to the UK. So we'll kind of get one little roundup from him, see what the fans are doing, see if they're all still hanging around in Madrid or if they're on their way home like him as well. One guy who I know is on his way home is Graham Butler. He's in the car. He's in the motorhome. He's pulled over. We'll have a chat with him as well next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
So just a couple of reminders how you can get in touch with us evening here on the Love Sport Review show on for another 15 or so minutes. Then we're going to turn our attention to some fan shows, get the AFC Wimbledon guys in the studio. We've got Kevin Boras joining us in the studio. Going to do somewhat of a League One review of the season, go through some various sides, but also look ahead to their pre-season tour. They're heading over to Germany. So got a couple of really good, interesting guests for you for that one. But in regards to getting in touch, at Love Sport Radio is the Twitter handle. But as I mentioned just a few short moments ago, we've got WhatsApp as well now. Cough, moving up in the world, didn't we? Proper modern. Text in via WhatsApp on 0208 720 558. It's the exact same number as what you would use to ring us. And of course, you can ring us as well if you want to. But just remember to include your name with your message, with your point of view, so I can read it out on air. Just add Love Sport as a contact, like you would anyone else. We're just a mate, just like Dave down at the pub. Add Love Sport and then drop us a message, 0208 70 20 558. So, of course, we're talking about the Champions League and the huge shock in the world of boxing yesterday, where the undisputed boxing champion of the world, Anthony Joshua, was beaten by that short, fat man down at the pub. And we can hear from Anthony Joshua now. Here are his thoughts of that fight yesterday.
Ooh, just in front of a good fighter. Boxing is a tough sport. I train hard, I stay dedicated, and I just got beat by a good fighter tonight, and it'll be interesting to see how far he can go. So good luck to him, but I've got to bounce back, and this is all part of the story and the journey.
The fight changed in the third round. You had him down and you had him hurt, and then did you maybe get involved in a swing up that you didn't need to get involved in?
Fighter at heart, boxer by trade, do you know what I mean? So but look, he done well he had to do. Everyone's come out for a good night of boxing. It's got people talking, so more life to the heavyweight division.
Did you think you were going to come back into it, though? You seemed to get your legs back under you, and then every time you threw, he seemed to just beat you to the counter, maybe?
Well, you know when your legs are all over the gap. You're just trying to stabilise your mind, your whole body. It's the first time, really, like that in a heavyweight fight. The one with Klitschko, I was just tired. But he's a very grounded fighter. With me, they can't box with me, so they just look for big shots. So I've just got to work on being a bit more stronger on my base. But congratulations to the first ever heavyweight Mexican champion.
What about the ending? You were shaking your head there. Was it just a little bit of confusion? Now you've had a few minutes to think about it.
It's upsetting. My team, like, we put together a strong team. You know, Watsi, Sissoko, Okoli, Somali Boxer. Good bunch of team with 258 management, and I'm the first one to take a loss. But we bounce back.
Yeah, heard talk of a rematch. Will you exercise that straight away? Is that what you want to do? Just get straight back into the fire and rematch him straight away?
Okay, I got my language.
That's okay, I apologize. I know you're emotional.
That armory, that solid armory. But this is the risk we take, isn't it? But we'll bounce back. But congratulations to him. Do you know what I mean? Every fighter deserves respect, so congratulations to him.
Heard some talking commentary that he's a lovely guy. He's very disarming. Wanted a photo with you, wanted to shake your hand. Did he maybe just, I don't know, maybe diffuse you a little bit that you didn't have that fear factor?
No, I respect every fight. Once you're in there, it's like, it's guts and glory. But this is all part of like the legacy and the story. It's how strong I come back. But I look forward to seeing where I went wrong. But I'll bounce back in it. He's a champ for now. Just put that in mind. He's a champ for now. I shall return.
Okay, thank you for standing around and talking.
Such surreal, isn't it? Talking and hearing from Anthony Joshua. There was his thoughts from that defeat yesterday. Say last night, this morning against Andy Ruiz Jr. I mean, I've still not quite soaked it all in. So I suppose Anthony Joshua's going to need some time as well, talking about his team and how he's got this team behind him. I mean, question marks have got to be asked of them. Is there a complacency in his team? Does he need to relook at the way he does all of his camps and how he trains and how he prepares for his next fight? Because he undoubtedly will return. It's just who and how he does it. Right, let's turn our attentions back to the Champions League. Wasn't quite the upset like the boxing division that we were hoping before. Liverpool winning 2-0. Divock Origi and Mo Salah scoring the goals for Jurgen Klopp's team to give them their sixth Champions League title. It denied, of course, Spurs their first ever one. Now, my usually trusty sidekick, Graham Butler, we let him have the night off. We let him have the weekend off because he had a trip to go on. He had the trip of a lifetime, or so he hoped, all the way to Madrid. Well, he's on the way home now, and Graham's on the phone. How are you, mate? Are you okay?
We're still breathing. We're still going.
I mean, now it's not quite 24 hours. Well, 24 hours pretty much since the kickoff, or basically since Mo Salah scored the penalty. How are you feeling in all seriousness? Are you thinking differently now than perhaps what you were last night?
No, probably not, mate. I think we're all under the assumption that it was a missed opportunity, if anything. You know, Liverpool didn't have a great game. It was probably one of their worst games that they played this season, to be honest. And they were there for the taking. And I genuinely just don't think we've done enough to win the game. We didn't play it at the tempo that we wanted to. And sort of before the game, we did say, as fans, look, for 90% of them, it's their last game of the season. Just go out with a bang. Just give everything you've got. And whilst I honestly believe they, you know, they're obviously trying and they want to win. For me watching, they didn't seem the intensity that we wanted to see to sort of put Liverpool to the sword.
Yeah, no, mate, I went to the New White Line Stadium yesterday to watch it, to Carl's Square. I bought my Spurs shirt. I was proper supporting you boys. But look, let's make no bones about it. It wasn't a good game. It wasn't a good game, was it? And a couple of big decisions, one in terms of selection and one that the referee made. Let's start with the decision to give Liverpool a penalty. Was it a penalty for you?
I think that's very harsh to be given that. I think when you look at any time in the game, I don't see whether it's the first minute, the 50th minute, or the last minute. I think people are saying you can't be doing that first thing in the first minute in the game. But the ball is smashed at him from 5 yards away. Okay, people might say, why is his hand out there? But he doesn't. You're not thinking like that in the heat of the moment. He's just trying to block a cross, I think, not intentionally with his hand, just get in the way of the ball. And he's been had the ball whacked in from sort of 5 yards away, and you kind of think, if the ref, I think, had any sense, you look at that and say, no, that's not a deliberate act, that's not handball, play on, carry on. And to do that sort of within a minute of the game, I think it was ridiculously naive for the ref, and obviously on our part, a little bit harsh. Well, a very harsh, I think, because it you know, you plan for, ever since the end of the Ajax game, you plan for this game, and you plan for everything, and all those plans have just gone up in the air within 60 seconds of the first whistle. So it was an uphill start just from then, and I think that, you know, it really didn't help the game at all.
No, it didn't help the game at all. But I don't think the referee had any other decision, Graham. I feel horrible saying it. You know, I don't. I think we feel so sorry for the situation because it was in the first minute, and because it was so unfortunate in the sense of he put his arm out to instruct players behind him, but his arm is so far outside of his body. It's always going to be given, isn't it? And if it was the other way round, you would be screaming for a penalty for your team, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think deep down everyone would be sort of screaming, and I think that after that, any time that one of our players got in the box, there was always the feeling that he would even it up, because there was suggestions. I mean, we was watching a big screen, Jake, and you watch so many replays, it's very hard to sort of say at the time, but I still think it hit him. I don't know, you might have seen it a bit differently, but I still think it hit him on like the outside of the ribs.
It hit him on the stomach and then onto his arm. It definitely hit his arm.
Okay.
But the thing is that people argue saying, well, it's hit his chest first, so it's not the ball's not hit directly onto his hand. Look, it's such a grey area, isn't it, with the handball rule.
Yeah.
But ultimately, for me, it's if it's in a natural or unnatural position. And unfortunately, whilst he's not jumping with his arms out, he's pointing to someone. His arm shouldn't be there, is it, for the referee? But Graham, look, we can probably debate that the handball and the penalty till the kind of the cows come home, or frankly you do, which is probably going to be quite a while. Yeah,
the cows will probably be quicker. we're stuck on traffic in a minute. We're stopped again.
Whereabouts are you? You're still in France, right?
Mate, I haven't got a clue. We're coming up to a little town called Niort. Is it Niort?
Niort.
N-I-O-R-T.
Yeah, I know it very well.
We're stuck there, and we've encountered quite a few protests on the way.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
It's not against Pochettino, is it?
I think they're trying to turn the Liverpool fans round and turn them back. You're not allowed back in.
We're playing the game again. But mate, the big other decision, I suppose, was Harry Kane, wasn't it? The build-up for weeks and weeks and weeks. Is he going to be fit? If he is fit, if he's half fit, what do we do? Do we start him? Now he's started. I mean, now we can all be wise after the event. But in hindsight, was it the right decision to start him?
Personally, I think it wasn't. Everyone was having this conversation, either in the pubs, in the fan zones, in our motorhome. Whichever way it went, unless Kane scored a hat-trick or the winning goal and Spurs won, there was never going to be a right decision to be made. At the end of the day, he was the manager. He's the one that has to make that decision. And I think it was extremely, extremely harsh on Lucas Moura.
Yeah.
Admittedly, if Kane played, we all said, if Kane starts, one of them will miss out. It's just, you know, you're not going to go completely gung-ho.
No.
One of them had to miss out, which I thought was extremely harsh. And especially on Lucas Moura, you know, without his hat trick, we would never have been there. And there's you probably said on social media as well, there's a lot of sort of general criticism towards Kane, in as much as you've kind of forced yourself to be fit.
I was going to say, almost a bit selfish. Is ego?
You've kind of looked after yourself more so than the team. And
he
I think
didn't want to miss out.
He didn't want to miss out on this one big opportunity of him to score in a Champions League final, and I think I think that the decision should have been made, and Potts should have been big enough to go, no, you've had a few weeks out, Lucas Moura has to start, he scored the hat-trick that got us here, you cannot leave him out, you're not match sharp, you know that Liverpool are going to start the game like an express train, like they always do, but they didn't, funnily enough, but in that sort of game, you want your players that are 100% match fit, 100% focused. And I thought it was the wrong move. And I would have. The thing was, Jay, we all said that if it went to 90 minutes extra time, Kane would have been out on his feet. He would never have made it. So would you just sacrifice a player just to keep him on the pitch just because he could score a penalty? Or would you have thought, okay, this is going to be a tight game. We leave him on the bench in the thought that it could go to extra time. Bring him on after 60, 70 minutes. You've got 20 minutes at the end of the game, plus you've got another 30 minutes. You've got 50 minutes in you, which he should have. And he would have been fresh for our extra time and probably finished the game strongly like we normally do. But he started. That was the decision. And it unfortunately proved to be sort of the wrong one.
Yeah, no, not to be. Look, Graham, mate, I appreciate you speaking to me. Have a safe trip back, however long it takes. And I'll see you next week, yeah?
Yeah, I should be in on time next week, so we don't get any more traffic.
Good man. Graham, thank you, mate. There we are, Graham Butler, on the way back from Madrid. Gutted Spurs fans, as I'm sure they all are. And that's the thing, isn't it, as well? I suppose the Arsenal fans faced a similar thing in Baku when you go all the way. You don't really kind of contemplate, do you, that you're going to be making this trip back not as victors. You think, you know, I need to be there. I need to be there as a fan of my football club. You know, it doesn't matter how hard it is, as long as I'm there. But then it's the thought and the moment, isn't it, when you've got to make the trip back and you've lost that game of football. But look, commiserations to Spurs. I am genuinely gutted for you. It would have been the perfect way, wouldn't it, to end your season. An incredible moment for your football club. But yep, unfortunately not to be. Anyway, this has been the Love Sport Review Show. It'll be back at some point, I'm sure, across the evening here on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.